Thank you. Yeah. So let me begin by thanking the organizers for inviting me here, and also Federico, because he helped me a lot with the accommodation. And okay, so as Federico announced, the title of the talk is Homogeneous Isotropic Turbulence with Polymer Additives. And this work, well, I've been working on polymers for quite some time now, and this work was done in collaboration with Dhruvaditya, who is over here. Ah, sorry. This work was collaboration with Dhruvaditya, Professor Rahul Pandit at IIC Bangalore, and another student of Rahul, Anupam Gupta, whose work I'm not going to discuss today. But and then I have been lately also interested in some channels for turbulence, again done with Dhruvaditya and Farangis, who are, and Luca Brandt, who are at KTH Stockholm. What I'll concentrate today is on this part, and according to me, even in this part, you can divide the area into three main topics. One is a numerical analysis of systems with polymer additives in turbulence. The second one is doing, I mean, attacking it from the numerical and doing simulations and trying to understand what's happening. And finally, the experiments about which Haitao discussed yesterday. So what I'm going to tell you today is more towards the numerical perspective of the system, but I won't touch upon how you are going to simulate it, but rather going to show you the results and the interpretations. And if you are interested in the details of how things are done, I mean, there is a list of references which you can always look at. So the outline of the talk is, I'll very quickly introduce to you about what are the standard experiments which made people to think about drag reduction or other phenomena with polymers. Then how I'm going to model polymer solutions in my simulations. Then I'll present two sets of results. One is for studies where turbulence is decaying in time, and the other one where the turbulence is statistically steady. And finally, I'll draw some conclusions. So, well, the whole story started long time back in 1946. This is one of the most famous experiments done by Toms, where he showed that if you have a pipe flow, and you have turbulent pipe flow, and you add polymers to it, then the effective pressure that you need to force the water to go from one end to the other is dramatically reduced on the addition of polymers. And he defined the drag reduction in terms of the change in the pressure gradient when you add polymers to the system. There are also other experiments where, so this is the case where you have a turbulent jet first in absence of polymer additives, and then when you add polymers you see formation of coherent structures. You don't have all this spray formation when after the addition of polymers. People also look at what happens when you add polymer additives to a turbulent flow behind a grid. So this was a flow behind a grid. Now this is a very old experiment, so it's not clear in the present day how much you should take all the data, I mean how seriously you should take all the data, considering that there are huge error bars. So I mean this is varying polymer concentration and there is no systematic trend here. But it was clear that the polymers are affecting the flow, even a homogeneous isotropic flow, in two ways. One, they are modifying the energy spectrum in the inertial range and also in the large length scales, but it's not clear how true this part is. At least in the present day experiments, a lot of people have seen this part. Now, if you come to more recent experiments, this is the one which is the closest to what I am going to discuss about. This is the experiments done by Liberzon and others. So they have this counter-rotating disks to generate turbulence. They look at a very small volume element. And then they ask, so here is a plot of the eigenvalues of rate of strain tensor. And the question they ask is, how does this distribution changes on the addition of polymers? And what they find is that when you add polymers, the PDF shrinks in these directions. So this is the one for water, and this is the one when you have added polymers to the system. There were other experiments. I think yesterday Haitao showed one of this picture where they again observed that the effect of polymers is indeed in the reduction of small scale structures. So the question is, well, can you understand it in with a very simple model of poly. I mean, all this phenomena is done with, of course, in experiments with real polymers. The question that we asked was whether you can use a very simple model of polymer, and can you understand many of these features that are appearing here? So okay, let me skip this slide and let me go to now the main topic of the talk. So the point is that what we are going to do is a very standard way to model polymer solutions. That is, we are going to use a continuum picture. So you have your Navier-Stokes equation, and the effect of polymer appears via additional stress term. And for the polymers, what we take is a very simple Phenippi-Dumble model. And if you take Dumble model, then what you need to look at is the conformation of the Dumble. And this is the equation. This is a famous Phenippi equation for elastic Dumble with a finite extension. And these are the parameters which one looks at in this model. One is the non-dimensional concentration. And in my simulation, C equal to 0.1 would typically correspond to 100 ppm of polyethylene oxide solution. And the other thing is Weisenberg number, and I would define, since I don't have any Lagrangian particles in my system, I would define my Weisenberg number corresponding to the tau eta of the simulation.
This C depends not on the concentration, but also on molecular weight.
Yes.
What is molecular weight?
Okay, that I don't know.
One, it should be large molecular
weight. Okay, that I don't know. I mean, exactly, because I mean, in the modeling, at least you end up with just these two parameters. Okay, so let me just go over to the first part of the talk, which has to do with the decaying turbulence. So what I mean by decaying turbulence is you start your system with energy which is initially concentrated in first few Fourier modes, and then just allow it to go. And so if you do such a simulation, you find that the energy first decreases. So energy keeps on decreasing, but the energy dissipation rate increases, reaches a peak, which typically corresponds to a cascade completion, and then again starts to decay back. And so the question that we wanted to know was what happens to the energy dissipation rate in the system when you add polymers. And so here is the first quantitative result, where we showed that when you add polymers to the system, the energy dissipation rate systematically decreases. Okay? And this is very similar to actually what Haitao showed yesterday, where in their experiments, which were tailor-made to do homogeneous isotropic turbulence, they also observe a reduction in the energy dissipation. Now, this is as a function of concentration. So the red curve is when for the pure Navier-Stokes or for the pure fluid. The blue curve is when you have increased the concentration, and the black curve is for the largest concentration. And from this, you can define what we call as a dissipation reduction. And so this is nothing but how much my energy dissipation rate has changed percentage-wise. And you straight away see, again, this is similar to what Haitao had shown yesterday for experiments, but now for a very simple model, that the dissipation rate, the dissipation reduction increases as you increase concentration. On the other hand, at least for our decaying turbulence simulation, we found that the dissipation reduction decreases, though only mildly, when you increase Weisenberg number. And well, now we think that this is because of the fact that polymers don't extend much when you are doing a decaying turbulence simulation. And I'll show you something which quantitatively shows that. The other quantity that one would like to know is what happens to the energy spectrum. Because once you look at energy spectrum, you know how the energy is being transferred between different length scales. So here is a plot of energy spectrum. The red curve is the pure Navier-Stokes or the pure fluid energy spectra. The black one is for slightly higher concentration. I mean, these are the black and the blue are at two different concentrations. And you can straight away see that there is a reduction in energy at intermediate scales, but the most striking effect of the polymers is that at the large scales, at the large wave vectors, the energy is being pumped back into the fluid. Okay, and this can be understood in terms of a scale-dependent viscosity, if you like. So, what we did was from our simulations, we defined a scale-dependent viscosity, which was nothing but essentially just doing this, that in your Navier-Stokes, you have so this term, and then if you add polymers, you have an extra term. And then we said that, okay, if I want to find out a scale-dependent viscosity, let me call this term as some mu effective k square mod u k square. And from there, I can get mu effective and find out how different it is from the pure fluid case. And this is what is plotted here. And you can straight away see that whenever the moment there is a crossover, the scale-dependent viscosity goes negative, indicating that the energy is being pumped back into the fluid. Okay, let me skip this. Okay, this is the definition if you want. The other thing which we, again, to make comparisons with experiments, we wanted to have a look at were the structure functions. So this is the experimental plot of the compensated structure functions versus R by eta. And this is what you get from simulations. Now, I should put a caveat here, which is the following, that in experiments, of course, you reach much larger Reynolds number that can be ever attained in a simulation. I mean, these simulations were done at Reynolds number, which was something like 40, so which is much lesser than experiments. But it's clear that if you look at deep dissipation range, something here, the trends are exactly the same between experiments and simulations. Okay, so in both the cases, you indeed find that on the addition of the polymers, the energy is reduced at these small scales. Okay, next, one can look at how does the PDF or probability distribution of vorticity is affected, because that's directly related to the dissipation. And again, you find that the vorticity is dramatically reduced, or the rare vorticity events are dramatically reduced on the addition of polymers. And this, if you want, can be very easily rather seen if you look at isosurfaces of vorticity. So this is the isosurfaces of vorticity plotted at the peak of the energy dissipation rate. The left is for the pure fluid, and you can straight away see these filamentary structures which are commonly associated with Navier-Stokes turbulence. On the other hand, on the right-hand side, you have the same at the snapshot in presence of polymer additives and taken exactly at the same time. And you can clearly see that all these filamentary structures are gone, and you have more sheet-like structures present in the system. So this was one of the clear indicators that indeed the small-scale vorticity is, or rare vorticity events are dramatically reduced when you add polymers to the system. And this is also similar to the jet picture which I had shown you earlier. Now, coming to the extension of polymers in decaying turbulence. And so here I plot the cumulative PDF, and if you carefully look at it, you will straight away see that in comparison to the maximum extensions, the polymer extension is much smaller. It's something like 0.08 of the maximum extension of the polymer, which is much less than what is typically observed in experiments. And we think this is the reason why our Weisenberg number trend was completely wrong. So at this point, we decided that, or we realized that doing decaying turbulence was also a bottleneck because you weren't allowing the polymers to stretch a lot. So we decided to go on to forced turbulence simulations, because in forced turbulence, you have the same amount of strain rate which is felt by the polymer for a very long time.
That means actually there is no forced stretch transition.
No, in this case there won't.
Any influence on flow?
No.
Yeah, but what you get?
Yes.
It's controversial because on one hand you tell there is big influence on flow.
Yes.
On the other hand, you're telling that polymers almost didn't stretch.
No, they stretch, but the number of polymers that have stretched to large extension are much smaller.
Yeah, but 0.08 it's below coil stretch transition.
Yes.
Below coil stretch transition, the elastic energy is negative, and it cannot influence on flow. That's the point.
No, but I mean it.
That's why I think that.
No, but here the
continuous approach is.
But here the if you look at the gradients, they are very large. I mean because it's the gradients which affect the flow. But anyways, let me come to the force case where things would become much more clearer and cleaner also. So, okay, the force turbulence simulations that we had done were actually very close to the experiments, in the sense that we keep the energy that we inject into the system exactly the same. Okay, so what we keep is the total energy injected, which is F dot U, is exactly the same for all the simulations, and then we just change so these are for three different Weisenberg numbers. We change the Weisenberg number and we ask the question, what is the effect of polymers on the system? And we straight away observe that, again, very similar to experiments, that the effect of polymers is to straight away reduce the energy that is dissipated in the system. Yes.
So in your simulation, you could find out where the energy goes, right?
Yes, that's what we did from the energy spectrum.
What's the difference? Where does the energy go?
Where is energy going? If it's going in elastic energy.
No, I'll show you the energy spectrum and then it's clear where is the energy going, right?
No, it's not clear. It should go to elastic stresses.
Yes.
And elastic stresses, if you calculate.
Yes.
If you take point or A, the stretched polymers.
No, in this case it's much more. It's much more. I mean, this
not
is the...
here, but in previous.
Yes.
It will be much smaller than Reynolds stresses. It means that the influence of polymers is negligible, because only influence of polymers going through elastic stresses. And if elastic stresses on the size, on the scales of the dissipation scale is
yes.
smaller than Reynolds stresses, you will not see any influence of polymers. But that model is definitely contradictory.
I mean, it's not clear because, I mean,
if you look at the energy spectrum, for example, the main effect comes inside the dissipation energy.
Yeah.
So that is where the effect, I mean, okay, as in terms of a very crude picture, the polymers are taking energy from the fluid at a length scale, which is kind of determined by where their time scales match. But the polymers, of course, cannot dissipate, so the energy must come back into the fluid.
Yeah.
And that's coming back at even higher Fourier modes. So in some sense, you are taking energy out of inertial range and putting it by hand in the dissipation range. So that means you will dissipate it even faster.
But it would not show up in this quantity.
Yes, so that
shows up here, right?
It decreases faster.
No, but I guess this is calculated for a new Sij, right?
No, this term? Yes, this is the dissipation. Yeah.
So if your energy come back to the dissipating range, then you shouldn't see any difference. I mean, it has to be... the energy you put in has to go somewhere.
Yeah, it goes into the polymer's term.
A polymer cannot store energy forever.
No, but I mean, wait. I mean, you have this term, right?
Pumping energy into the polymer.
No, wait. Wait. You have this term, and you have a contribution which is U dot del dot T. Okay? This is the dissipative term. And if you add the things, you exactly get that all the curves are, again, going back around one.
This is a time-dependent simulation.
This is a time-dependent simulation.
So I think the point is that as time goes on, you've dissipated more of the energy previously, and that's why the dissipation rate is lower.
Yes.
It's not steady state, and Hightower brings a steady state.
Right. I mean, at a steady state, you...
No, I mean, it's a time-varying, but it's a statistically steady state simulations. These are force turbulence simulations. So this is the Peano-Navier-Stokes. At this point, I add polymers to the system, and you see that there is a decrease in energy dissipation, the viscous dissipation.
So this is a steady state?
Yes. Yes.
And this is only viscous dissipation?
This is only the viscous dissipation.
So my question refers to what Mitra said about the spectrum, right? So you took energy from some intermediate wave number.
Yes.
And then you put back at the large wave number
yes.
in the dissipative range.
Yes.
So if polymer doesn't dissipate energy by itself, all the dissipation has to be through fluid.
Yes.
But then that should show up here. That's what I don't.
So the fluid dissipation is going down.
No, but it means that when you take energy at one scale and put it back in another...
No, it's not, okay, it's not exactly the same, okay. Guys, it's not exactly the same, it's not exactly like, okay, water it goes in down here is exactly pumped up here. Of course not, because you have this term also in the system, and this term can be both positive and negative, and there is no theorem which tells you.
But that's another thing, right? So if you're talking about that, so each polymer is small.
Yes.
They dissipate at much smaller scale.
I mean, if you look at the model, there is the dissipation is through a relaxation. Okay, I mean, there's no dissipative term as you conventionally think in terms of Navier-Stokes. So it's a hyperbolic equation. I mean, there's no k grad square c term sitting there. So, but what I'm saying is that you have this term present, and then this term is also a dissipative mechanism, right? What you are saying is the following, most probably, that the only effect the polymer has is it's taking away energy from the inertial scales and exactly pumping the same amount of energy back at the dissipation scale. So the total energy should be exactly the same. But I'm saying that's not the case because you have this extra term which takes up energy.
You had a figure with the balance of terms, right? You can show that.
Well, here I don't have it, unfortunately.
But okay. But in the paper we have.
Yes. But anyways, let me go ahead and let me look at... So again, I mean, in the forced turbulence case, if you look at what is the PDF of vorticity or the local dissipation, you again see that it's reduced. Furthermore, I mean, you can just couple these two and this would give you the acceleration. Right, because it's nothing but omega square minus s square, which is the acceleration, Laplacian square of p. And this is again very similar to what you observe in experiment, where you see that the acceleration is reduced when you add polymers to the system. Furthermore, if you rescale the things by the RMS, what you observe is that the two curves exactly collapse onto each other, which means in some sense that what polymer is doing is just rescaling the energy or energy dissipation rate in some way. And this is again observed in various experiments. So this is again a confirmation that look, even a very simple model, which hasn't got many of the complications of a standard polymer model, is able to reproduce most of the things which are observed in the experiments. And this is the isosurface plot of vorticity, which is again very similar to what is observed in decaying turbulence, what I had shown in decaying turbulence. So left, you have thin filamentary structures, and on the right, all these things are gone on the addition of polymers. You can be more quantitative and look at things in terms of QR diagram. So this is a standard teardrop shape, which we all know for a pure Navier-Stokes case. And when you add polymers to the system, you straight away see that this QR diagram has shrunk dramatically, again indicating that all the small scales that were present in your system have been reduced when you added polymer to the system. Well, let me first show this. And in this case, indeed, you observe that your polymer extension is very close to the maximal extension that you can get. So in both these simulations, this is for concentration 0.1. The maximum polymer extension is something like 0.9 L square, which is as large as the maximum polymer can stretch. And when I increase the concentration, the maximum polymer extension goes down, and it's still something like 0.8 times the maximum extension. So in the force case, things are much more similar to what is observed in experiments, because indeed the polymer sees the stresses for much longer time, and hence it's much more extended than in the decaying turbulence which I had shown you earlier. And then you can also look at how the energy between different scales is modified when you add polymers. So on the left hand side, so here's a simulation which was done at very high moderately high Reynolds number. And in this case, we didn't resolve the dissipation range properly. And so the red curve is the pure Navier-Stokes case. And all these two other curves are for different values of concentration. And this is very similar to the plots which are shown in many other simulation studies. And it's clear that the effect of polymers is to reduce the energy in these intermediate scales, but there is an indication that in the deep dissipation scale, the energy is going up. So to clarify it further, what we did was we conducted simulations where we had a very well-resolved dissipation range. So these were even at lower Reynolds number, because if you want to resolve your dissipation range properly, you have to sacrifice your Reynolds. And okay, these were 512 cube, and you can clearly again see that the effect of the polymer is very dramatic in the deep dissipation range, and the energy is increased in presence of polymers, the fluid energy. Whereas this is the pure Navier-Stokes curve, where the, so, I mean, it's again similar to the picture which I had shown earlier, that at the intermediate scales, the energy is taken away from the polymer, or the polymer takes away energy from the fluid, whereas in the deep dissipation range, it pumps it back. Pardon? Okay, here the Kolmogorov scale is somewhere here. So these were simulations where it was completely dissipation range dominated. And because the problem is that the Kolmogorov scale is here, we had to go to K max eta, which was something like 10, to be sure that what we are observing was not a numerical artifact. Whereas in this case is something which is conventionally done in all simulations where K max eta is somewhere around 1 here. And this is what the standard picture is, what is shown by everyone. Okay, I think I have taken up my time, so I should. Okay, this I already showed, that in the force case, you have the polymer extensions which are much larger. Most of the times the polymer are extended to something like 0.7, 0.8 times their maximum extension.
This is the cumulative PDF.
Yeah, but the cumulative also has a peak something like this. So which is similar to what you were saying, that in an experiment you have most of the polymers very stretched. See, the problem with decaying turbulence is that the amount of shear that the polymer feels is changing in time, so it's never stretches much. Whereas in force turbulence, it's allowed to stretch much more.
Shear doesn't stretch more.
No.
Only potential.
Yeah.
Secondly, if it's a polymer are not stretched. Then the influence of polymers is negative. That's why it's surprising if you get something.
I mean,
it's particularly surprising if you have on one hand you have influence and stretch polymers. Okay. On the other hand, the first part, polymers are not stretching, still be stretched.
No, they are stretched, but their stretching is much lesser.
Point O is not stretched.
If you look at the gradients, that are very large gradients present in the system. So,
okay, polymer stretches, that sense polymer stretches in shape.
Okay, yeah. So, okay, I mean, that, I'm not sure completely, but okay. Yes, that I should.
The compensated structure functions.
Yes. No, I don't have it in the talk. So okay, to conclude, I mean, I've shown that you can, both force and decaying case shows in a very simple model of polymers, shows results which are similar to that in experiments. And according to us, the phenomena that one should look at in homogeneous isotropic turbulence is dissipation reduction and not drag reduction. I mean, because that's in controlled setups, that's the one which you can easily look at. And the polymers decrease energy of the turbulent fluid at intermediate scales and then the pump it back at large scales. And finally, I would also like to mention that the fact that the energy is changing at large scale was controversial till some time, but there have been recently some more simulations published in JFM which agree with what we had predicted earlier. So, okay, thank you. Yes.
What Reynolds number you observed this influence
for? So these were
also for dissipation.
So problem is that dissipation. Yeah, okay. So the problem is that in simulations, at least, we have been never able to find out the critical concentration or something like a critical Reynolds number, because most of our simulations were at RE lambda around 40 to 80, and in all those cases, we always used to observe.
Also 20.
In 20, we don't have much dissipation reduction, but I mean, that was just for one case where we want
critically look at the possibility of a critical Weisenberg number.
It should be not Weisenberg, Reynolds.
Yes. Yeah, but I mean, at 20 we don't have major effect, but at 20 we did it.
Oh, yes.
No. At 20, the results were mostly for RE lambda 80. The 21 was done just to resolve the dissipation range and to see whether there is effect. Yes.
Reynolds 20 already you have this effect.
You have the effect in the energy spectrum, but if
there is no threshold, that's what.
Yeah, if you say there is a mind.
That's an interesting question. That's
yes. Yeah.
That's strange. That should be.
Yeah, because I mean, there's one more thing which is a bottleneck of the model, I would say, is that in experiments you typically have a critical concentration. Whereas in.
What do you mean critical? Of course, critical concentration, but critical concentration below 1 ppm.
Yeah.
It's very low.
Yeah, but in simulations you typically don't see such thing. I mean, it's.
But it didn't go so low. Because everything defined by C.
Yes.
And C is include both concentration and molecular weight.
Okay.
You don't know what is molecular weight, what is concentration.
Yes, that's true.
If you get together this one parameter, you don't know which actually what is the value of this parameter. Critical, maybe it's 10 minus 5. You don't know.
No, but what I'm saying is that, in, for example, in channel flow, you have a maximum drag reduction asymptote. We don't have, we never found something like that happening in homogeneous isotropic turbulence.
Much higher, Reynolds number.
Yeah, but it's not clear whether it, yes.
I don't know much about this, but I'm confused, a little confused by the last bullet here.
Yes.
You say that with polymers, the intermediate length scales get less energy.
Yes.
But the small scales are getting more energy.
Yeah, I mean in the deep dissipation range,
so,
yes.
And you say that the dissipation is reduced.
Yes.
So that means that the swing wave fluctuations are getting smaller.
Yes.
So how does it relate to the statement that you have now more energy at a small scale?
Okay, in Fourier space we indeed observe that the energy is increased at very large wave vectors, but if you look at the real space structure functions where things are smeared out, you always see that at all r's the energy is reduced, the value of S2 of r is reduced in presence of polymers.
I thought your question is that I have some E of k,
yeah,
and then I increase the function at higher k, then if I calculate k squared E of k, I should actually get bigger numbers, not smaller.
No, I mean, he's saying that why in the isosurface picture you still see a reduction of.
And how, and where does the energy get, where does the small scale get the energy? Is there anything like some equation that describes the spectral transfer?
Pardon?
Yes, is there any equation that describes the spectral energy transfer?
Well, you can put the equation in spectral space. You can write down the energy and then write down.
We had a balance.
But I haven't. Okay, you can write down the balance between UK del dot P minus K. What's the flux? But that's very similar to the scale dependent viscosity that I had shown you earlier, right?
Well,
no,
we did look at the scale.
So,
scale,
right? Yeah, so it's this term UK dot del dot J minus K. This is what you are saying. This is the flux from of the polymer part, and that changes sign. Yes.
So I mean, I've come back to what
yes.
Dissipation stuff. If you multiply your spectrum by k squared,
yes,
dissipation spectrum, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
And then if you have a heavy tail there, then you would expect the dissipation increase, wouldn't it?
No, because you see at these scales it has also dramatically reduced.
But that's not where the peak is. The dissipation spectrum peak is around the eta, which is.
I can show you the data, and I looked at it because I had the same question.
I see what you mean.
Yeah, because I had exactly the same question, but if you do it.
Exactly. You put energy in more higher k, you would expect that k squared E of k, the integral,
yeah,
actually increase.
Right.
Apparently it doesn't.
Yeah.
Because I mean the numbers here are also order of magnitude, the numbers here are also order of magnitude smaller. I mean to the numbers which have come here. Which you always take into account. I mean even if you multiply it by k square, these numbers are order of magnitudes larger than the numbers which hit here. So if you then just do the summation, you still have a reduction in the energy.
Where do you put the weight at higher k's?
Yes, I mean which.
But I guess the energy goes to even higher k's where,
yeah,
it doesn't matter so much anymore.
Okay. So what you are saying is that the peak of your dissipation spectrum is around the 10.
The black line.
The number k equals 10.
Yeah, something like
that. The black one.
The black one.
Yes.
We're back to this equation on onset.
Yes.
Yes.
There is calculation by a very simple model with Cheta and Celani, somebody in 2006.
Is that for Kalmogorov?
That's Kalmogorov. For, yeah, that's for Kalmogorov.
They show exactly the same age of the bulk. They look on dissipations, bulk, and that's what they
got. Yeah, but I mean, recent.
And they have onset and critical Reynolds number, independence of critical Reynolds number, and Weiss number.
But they look at F, the energy injection, F dot L by... But I mean, recently I had a discussion with Guido, and he told me that they now also observe this thing, that there is a reduction here, but at large case, they indeed see an energy of which is increasing.
But also, when you say that there's something different at K about 10, but K is not non-dimensional, so how do we interpret this?
Okay, so it's I should have said K eta, and this is around K eta 1.
So what you are writing as K is actually K eta?
K, no. Here it's K.
Okay.
But I have to multiply it by K eta to be then give you the correct non-dimensional number. That's what you're...
Where we divide or something, how do we see what it really means? Like,
no, I have to, if I do K eta, it's the non-dimensional.
If you divide by K eta, it's non-dimensional, otherwise...
Yeah. Yeah.
So different plots for different k.
Yeah.
But these are all three for the same Reynolds number.
Yeah, these are...
Here the Reynolds number is there.
Not knowing anything about this subject, I have my doubts that the polymers create a strain resistance dissipation in the water. And yesterday I mentioned that when you stretch and strain a molecule, you cause it to run through many quantum energy levels, and therefore you are emitting and absorbing photons. And some of the energy can leave that way. But also, when they are spring back, they're going to, the molecules within the polymer are going to hit individual water molecules and create phonons in the water, which will essentially be not an incompressible flow. You'll be generating tiny sound waves which are immediately viscously damped, that is, evanescent. So, as someone who knows nothing about this, it's not clear to me that the polymers recreate the strain rate field that results in energy dissipation in the classic hydrodynamic sense of incompressible turbine.
Even if those effects are, I don't know how important such effects are in experiments. But
in terms of the radiation field, I suggested that Eberhard point a broadband infrared radiometer into his volume and see with and without polymers what is the radiation field coming off. Okay. On the other hand, I wouldn't know about how to observe a phonon effect.
Yes.
It might be that you need to stretch an individual polymer and let it snap in some tiny volume and use some other technique to observe.
But
second one is that from our experiment, we don't see any significant change in the temperature.
In the temperature?
Yeah. When it stretches in the polymer.
Well, that's where the energy goes. If it's viscously damped by a strain rate
or
warmed by radiation or warmed by evanescent phonons.
It's actually dissipated on heat. But in simple way, it's through the Brownian motion of molecules around. It's more or less. And therefore, in that sense, it's an increased temperature, but not significant that we can measure. But in principle, it's generated through the Brownian motion of molecules.
But no matter which of the three mechanisms dissipate the energy, it ends up in heat. And that you can't measure the temperature change is a technical problem.
But suddenly such effects are neglected in the simulation.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely.
So in our case, suddenly whatever dissipation is coming by the fluid.
I think such effects have been ignored entirely, and I don't know how important they are because I know nothing of this topic.
What is written here is relaxation of them. And relaxation term telling that's another channel for dissipation. And what is another channel? Polymers relax back, and energy going into dissipating temperature and dissipates through the molecules. But temperature is not important. It's not changing. That's actually. dissipations of relaxation.
I mean, if you look at the equations, they are hyperbolic.
Defined in this way.
Yeah.
It's a ratio of relaxational term to non-linear term. That's what it means. Exactly like Reynolds number is ratio of non-linear term to dissipation due to viscosity. Weissenberg is ratio of non-linear term to relaxation.
And if you look at the equations, they're hyperbolic, okay? So if you just look at the polymer, they're hyperbolic. So if you look at just the polymer spectrum or the thing, I mean, you put it in a very simple flow and look at it, it's so similar to even the smallest scale. So you always have this power law behavior. If you just take a some simple flow field and put it in the Fenepi model and then allow it to evolve and then say, okay, let me plot what is the spectrum of the conformation tensor, you would have... No, I mean, it's just a self-power law kind of behavior, even to the smallest scales.
But there is no...
There is no... Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So you showed us the PDF of the polymer stretching.
Yes.
But I mean, I don't know anything about the simulation. It's hard for me to understand how you get this, because you have a field.
I have a conformation tensor field,
right.
And the trace of the conformation tensor gives me the radius or the extension.
Average.
It's average at a given point,
yeah,
yes.
But still, at any given point in your simulation contains millions of primers.
Yes.
It's a continuum
description, yeah.
So we look at distribution of, for example, U squared.
Yeah.
We look at the distribution of the trace of the polymer tensor.
Exactly.
But that one has many, many individual... If I make a comparison of your simulation with an experiment, any point you do that, you have averaged over many many polymers.
Yes. That's an average.
So you are averaging this already.
Yes, it's an average extension at every point.
Okay, but
that's just average of many
polymer.
All thermal noises.
Two averages involved.
Yeah, one is...
One is about the thermal noise.
Exactly.
And the other is about the fluid noise.
Yeah.
So what we are showing is average about the thermal noise.
Yeah. So fine. So I just want to get this, for example, when Dario presented his calculation, he is actually calculating individual polymer molecule, right?
That is true, but...
Yeah. So I mean, there is no...
Everybody looking at you. Was looking at Uriel coming online.
Oh,
sorry.
Okay.
All denial,
the question is, if you are computing only one polymer.
No, but these are dilute solutions, so you...
No, I mean, even dilute is much, much denser than what you can resolve in your simulation. It has to be averaged over many, many polymers.
Yeah, you do a noise average.
Yes, average over polymer.
Yeah.
Now, we measure stretching of polymer. We measure polymer, different polymers, and measure BDA.
Yes.
It's not exactly what you tell.
Yeah, that's what. So
in some sense, yes, because this is a continuum description.
Yeah.
Right. But my question is, that kind of averaging, would you miss something? Where it's okay, because the one you show is maybe the second moment of this distribution. So
yes.
The higher moment you don't resolve. Right?
No, we don't.
So would you miss some important physics? I mean, like Victor said, so in your case, your maximum stretching is maybe 0.08, but you still get a lot of drag reduction or whatever you call it. So.
I'm not sure I understand what you mean about the
higher moment. I mean, your equation, your conformation tensor field is the second moment. Of
yeah, but that's all is needed for the stress.
Average, right? So
yeah.
You don't have
the
higher
motion. But the point is that...
Yeah, eventually, we think
it's an average over the different motion.
Yeah, it's
average. Thermal
noise, exactly.
No, what I'm saying is, if I think about the physical maximum, you will have many, many polymers. Each of them will be stretched to a different degree.
Yes.
So, but for the stress, probably it's okay. You get only the second moment.
Yeah, because that's what it, yeah.
With your constitutive equations, it's okay. But
no,
with
no,
some
the,
other.
The second moment here is not a bad approximation because the probability distribution is actually Gaussian. Because we are looking at the thermal distribution.
How do you know the probability?
Yeah.
Because we are looking at because it's a thermal one. The thermal is always Gaussian.
Yeah, so this is the conformation tensor equation.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, so I think he's asking a very important question. He's saying that this, the C alpha beta,
yes,
is basically the second moment of R.
Yes.
What is about the thermal noise?
Yes.
Right. So how do we know that the higher moments of R are not important?
Right. That's what I'm saying.
But I, my probably naive answer would be that here we are averaging over thermal noise, which we know to be Gaussian.
Yeah.
So probably the second moment describes everything. That's what I may be wrong in that. The expert is there.
No, the point is that is the second moment with respect to noise, not with respect to the velocity field.
Yes.
So what they get, they have the probability of R squared. So they can have all the higher moments if you want. It's not only R squared. Averaged, they can have R squared to the power 4, 5, 6, 7, etc. So the only point that there may be a difference in having R squared averaged to a given power, or R to the power 2 cube, and then averaged. But they have all the statistics of the extension of R squared.
Yeah.
They have the distribution of R squared, not only R squared.
Mm-hmm. So we can make a comparison with this one with your calculation.
This. I mean, which one?
I mean, which one?
This one derives, there is an approximation, but it's derived from the single polymer analysis.
Yeah.
It's not disconnected. There is an approximation in the force, in the elastic force, but it is strictly
is
connected.
Is it a closure or?
It's a closure.
It's a closure.
And how good is the closure?
It's
linear relation.
Instead of having
the average of a function,
yeah. It's a function computed in the average.
I think this connects to the question of right now, right?
Yeah, exactly.
The average is over Gaussian noise, so the closure is not that. Because the average is over thermal noise.
Yeah.
Okay. Right, Dario?
Yes. No, I mean, it's known that this average is a weight. It's not extremely precise, but qualitatively doesn't change much what happens.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, the PDF issue has a peak at about zero, right?
No, that's for a decaying case. I mean, in the force case, it's much extended, right?
Yeah, it's
zero. The problem is that it's right, near zero.
Yeah.
That's the cumulative PDF.
Why it's simpler than flow?
It's a cumulative PDF. It's where you keep on adding.
Can you show us the
written thing is that if it is not stretched so much, or
yes,
it's not stretched practically at all, then why is it doing anything at all?
No, this is the cumulative PDF. Yes. So you keep on adding things.
No, that's okay. Sure.
So it's integral PXTX. I mean,
they have the PDF.
Okay. I mean, okay, I can dig it out and I can plot it.
From numerics, it's actually easier to calculate the cumulative PDF directly by something called rank order method.
Yeah.
So this doesn't have problem with binning. Mm-hmm. If you do histograms, your binnings will come and affect your data. Mm-hmm. But you can do cumulative PDF by just rank ordering the data. Mm-hmm. So that's sometimes what we do, so that there is no problem with binning. But then to find the PDF, you have to take a derivative, then of course errors will come. So that's why we
always show the cumulative.
Use cumulative PDF, which sometimes gives a setting.
But it's hard to see.
Yes, exactly. So maybe we should actually look at its derivative.
Okay, other questions? Well, thanks again.
Thanks.